Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game
on 2FM.
Our first guest is someone who's probably a little bit taller than you, maybe not, but he definitely has a bigger personality than you. And that's Peter Crouch. Peter, how are you?
Yeah, good, mate. Yeah, you?
Oh, keep him well yourself.
Yeah, all right. Not too bad.
How's the podcast going?
Loving it, to be fair. We finished the last series, but obviously, with all this lockdown stuff, we're like, what else are we going to do? We might as well bang out some more.
How are you going for content? We're struggling in the radio. Mate.
Listen, I could go all day. The only thing I'm struggling with is all this technical stuff. I'm trying to set up these Skype calls, all these like Zoom calls, things like that. I'm really struggling with that. It takes me about an hour to set it all up. But once I'm on, it's all good. The content's there.
You should get Ruby on. He's really sound. Great fun. Great crack.
I'd love to have him on. Me and Ruby did something recently. I think, I don't know if he's told you, but he saw me trying to get on a horse. That was something special.
We saw Peter. It was an incredible, and he was quite giving of his time and supportive.
He was ruthless all day.
You know him.
In fairness, I did watch Peter Crouch trying to get on a horse in the yard in Windsor, and the horse did not behave itself. And Peter Crouch was, you definitely brought up my estimation of footballers that you were going to have another go after getting a fall. And yeah, definitely, you were a lot tougher than I thought you'd be.
Do you know what Ruby said to me? He said, do not get on that horse. I promise you, I got on it. It threw me off. I was like a cowboy at one stage, trying to stay on this thing. And it threw me off. I landed face first. I think it's the first time I met Ruby. And I was face down on the stable floor. I got back up and said, right there, looked at him thinking, what on earth must he be thinking of me here? Yeah. But I was going to have another go, but he was like, nah, do not get back on that horse.
Well, he'd tell you pretty quickly what he's thinking of you, that's for sure.
He did that. Listen, he did that.
Peter, to be fair, unless your spleen is hanging out, there's no excuse to get back up in the horse as far as Ruby's concerned.
Yeah, exactly. And Paddy wasn't paying me enough anyway.
I agree with you there. You must renegotiate those contracts.
Peter, it is important, though. Like, obviously, you've scored 22 goals for your country, 42 caps, but I think it's the personality that everyone sees off the pitch, which is a brilliant podcast, and just anything you're always involved in. It's great to see that come out, you know, that you can have both the personality off it and the brilliant footballer on the pitch.
Yeah, that was obviously like something. It's gone quite well after, but, you know, you sort of keep yourself to yourself when you're playing your sport, and, you know, no one sees the real you. I think as a footballer my whole life, everyone who knows me probably knows that what I'm like, having played football. But when you're so guarded, when you're a Premier League player, and especially playing for England, you know, you say the wrong thing, you always seem to be in hot water. So you try to keep yourself to yourself. But the last couple of years I was playing, I decided to do a book, and I was doing my podcast, and I did various other things. I think people could see, you know, what it was like, and it seemed to go really well. Yeah. So obviously life sort of I just slipped into this media world, and it's all a bit different for me, and it's not what I'm used to. And listen, my first passion is football. That's never going to change. But this stuff's good fun, and I'm enjoying it. So I'm just going to ride it while it lasts.
In a way, do you find that because you've got such a big personality and such a likeable personality, and Donica is the same there as well, that sometimes people focus on that and it's almost like people forget that you were such a prolific goal scorer and such a great footballer as well, that it's the personality they see first?
I think that's a nice thing in some ways. I mean, you know, obviously I'll always have the football side, and that's like I say, that's my passion. No one will be able to take those things away from me, having, you know, represent my country and played at World Cups or whatever I've achieved. That's been my passion, and I loved doing what I did. But this other side of me, I always look at someone like Gary Lineker. I look at Gary Lineker, he's asking people questions, and then people forget that, you know, he was England's record goal scorer for so many years and one of the best centre forwards we've ever had. And I think that's credit to what he's doing. It's just the fact that he's very good at his job, and people see him as a presenter now. So I wouldn't mind if people see me as something else in years to come. It means I've been sort of a success in a different field, which is a good thing.
Peter, taking you back to football, obviously you started with QPR, you were with Villa, Southampton, Liverpool, you played with a lot of clubs. Where did you have the most enjoyment? What club did you enjoy being with most?
Oh, obviously there was different enjoyment for different reasons, but obviously I grew up in West London and QPR was my local team, and when I first started there, all my mates used to come and watch me, and obviously we were in the Championship then, and my mates were having fivers and tenners on me for the first goal scorer, and I got 8-9 first goals that year, and I was honestly, every time I got in the players' lounge, it was like I was getting mauled by the lads. They were like, it was the difference between us going out or not going out was me getting the first goal. So I mean, that was just such a fun time. But then on the flip side of that, obviously it being my local team, it was amazing. You know, friends and family in the crowd, but. As a footballer, I think playing for Liverpool, I couldn't, that won't be beaten. You know, I know it's a bit of a cliche, but Liverpool on a Champions League night at Anfield, you know, we played in huge games. I managed to get to the final in 2007, winning the FA Cup with Liverpool. That was something that I grew up on. It was bigger than the Champions League when I was a kid. So to win the FA Cup with Liverpool, I was probably playing the best football of my life. I was playing for England at the time, and I'd have to say that footballing-wise, that was the best.
Peter, I've been lucky enough to have been in a few stadiums in England, and there is nothing quite like Anfield, how close the supporters are to the pitch. They're in on top of you. Is there anywhere else quite like it?
It was a difficult one. Like, obviously, I think Anfield sort of stands out on its own. But I have to say, when we got into the Champions League with Spurs in the old White Hart Lane, and we played, obviously, Spurs haven't been in the Champions League since it's been since it changed the Champions League from the European Cup. So that was special getting in there, first and foremost, because we beat City to get fourth position and get in the Champions League. And then we had a rollercoaster ride in that time. And we beat Inter Milan at White Hart Lane, and we went away and beat AC Milan in the San Siro. And those nights at White Hart Lane were pretty special as well. And I'd have to say Anfield was unrivaled on the European night.
Peter, you give great insight also to the kind of dressing room, and you speak about the special moments for success. But for crack and fun, which stands out for you? Which dressing room would you love to be in for just fun and giddiness?
Portsmouth, by far. I think I just left Liverpool and I was under Rafa Benitez, and you know, everything was scrutinised. You know, and it was all, you know, yeah, once you'd won a game, you couldn't enjoy it. You were on to the next one because it's such a big club and, you know, there's so much expectation. But I left there under Rafa, who was so intense, and I went and played for Harry Redknapp. And that's not to say it was, you know, any slight on Harry, because we were a top side. I think we just won the FA Cup at Portsmouth, and we finished sixth in the Premier League. You know, I thought add one or two more players and genuinely we would have got in the Champions League. But as a group of lads, I mean, it was so much fun being in that dressing room, and because we were winning games and it was all going great. It was, every day was belly laughs, and it was a great place to be.
I was used to ride down, not between Portsmouth and Southampton, or a bit over that direction, in a place called Fontwell. And Harry used to turn up there on the odd Monday. Did you ever go racing with him? No.
Do you know what? No. It would always define his mood, though. After training, you'd get in, and if you knew if he's won his bets or lost his bets by his mood, every time.
Brilliant, Ruby. You were probably at fault for them having some horrible Mondays.
Probably was, Donegal, but sure. So be it.
Peter, we had Lee Westwood on yesterday, and he was making the point that when sports people want to relax, they go off and play golf, but because he's a golfer, that he can't go and play golf really to take his mind out of it. Just hobbies, do you have any, or what do you do in your spare time?
Yeah, that's it. Obviously, it's different times at the moment, isn't it? I'm not been out much, but yeah, I've been loving the golf. I really have. I've been trying to play as much as I can. Like, I didn't grow up with it. Football and tennis were my games, and I grew up there, obviously playing them constantly. I never grew up with golf, and I just assumed that because I was good at them, I thought I'd be quite natural at all sports. But golf, I just wasn't natural at that at all. But, you know, it's one of those things, you know, when you're competitive, you're like, why am I so bad at this? I've just worked so hard to try and get better and better and better. You know, I will get there to the place that I want to be.
Peter, we love listening to your podcast. It gives a real insight to you and your ability mainly to slag yourself. And, you share incredible embarrassing moments. And one that stands out was the one with Roy Keane when he saw you in your smart new car.
Yeah, I have. I've told this a few times. But, yeah, this is the genuine truth. I knew it wasn't me. I felt like I was doing well. I was playing for England. I was playing for Liverpool. Just come off the back of a decent World Cup and thought, right, I can upgrade my car. Got myself an Aston Martin. I looked at myself in the mirror. I thought, it's not me. I didn't drive it for 4 or 5 days. And then two or three days in, after driving, I thought, yeah, this is a bit of me, actually. I had my arm out the window. Had some tunes on. Had the sunglasses on. I pulled up in Hale Bars in Manchester. And, pulled up alongside Roy Keane. And I thought, I sort of give him the thumbs up. And he looked at me as if I was the most piece of whatever it was on his shoe. And just that one look from Roy was enough for me to sell the car that next that week. I knew I was being ridiculous. It wasn't me. But that look from Roy just confirmed it. I don't even know if he even knows this, but I did sell the car that week. And it was the best thing I ever did.
Yeah, a good financial hit to take in a week. A brand new car is not worth as much second hand. Peter, you're obviously involved at the moment in a TV show, Peter Crouch Save Our Summer. It's a one-stop shop entertainment show. How's that going? Yeah. When's it going to start?
We're going to be doing that live, I think, over the course of June. You know, obviously everything's been cancelled. You know, Glastonbury, Wimbledon, the Euros. Most of the sporting things, all the festivals, the music festivals. I'm just trying to bring a bit of fun to people's summer. You know, even if we're locked down, we're still going to attempt it. God knows how it's going to go, but we'll have a go, and hopefully it'll be a bit of fun and a bit of light-hearted relief, should we say, in these times that we're living in at the minute.
Well, obviously, I can see you replicating or trying to replicate the Euros in your back garden. How exactly are you going to do Glastonbury?
Right, listen, I've got a few mates that are up for doing it, and they're talking about doing gigs in their own back garden, and over Skype or something like that. It has to be. But listen, they're up for doing it. I've got a few bands. I've got a few musicians who are up for or having a go. And listen, if you were headlining a festival and now you're not doing anything, you're sitting there in your back garden, why not have a day out and do it over Skype? We'll just play the whole set out. We'll bang it out.
Peter, you had such a long career, and football has changed and is changing all the time. What was the biggest thing that you noticed that was different, or what way did it evolve in the most noticeable way?
Football's changed so much over the course of my career. Definitely, I think the professionalism obviously went up tenfold. I mean, when I first got in, I think it was 2000 when I broke into the QPR team, and there's a lot of older professionals sort of coming towards the end of their career, and I was, there wasn't many young players in the side. I only had them to look up to, and there was a lot of drinking. There was a lot of, fish and chips after games, and we didn't fly anywhere. There was a lot of coaches and things like that. And obviously the money that came into the game made the professionalism go up. The training grounds got better, and everything got better. But there was a fine line between it being less professional and more fun, and it probably being professional is amazing, but I think it might have lost something in the dressing room and something with the rivalries and passions in the game now. You know, when I think of the Man United Liverpool games, we used to kick lumps out of each other, and I think of Man United and Arsenal, those fantastic ties. I just don't see that as much anymore, and that's the only frustration on my part of watching football, is that I just don't see that sort of those games as much anymore, which is a shame. And I know, having just left the dressing room recently, obviously I was in a very good one when I retired at Burnley, but when we went down at Stoke, there was fractions in the dressing room, and it was sad to see. I was so glad that I managed to go to Burnley and sort of get back in a good environment again just before I retired, because it would have left a bit of a sour taste in my mouth. And retired at Stoke, because from what we were to what it became was sad to see.
Do you think that there's too much expected of footballers now? Like, there's so much focus, so much spotlight, all social media, the different media outlets we see now. You can't really move without somebody writing about you. Do you think it's too much, and we should maybe give a little bit of leeway?
I don't know, because, you know, what people always seem to harp back on is that you paid very well and you should take it, I suppose. But listen, I played football for 20 odd years, and it was the best thing that, you know, I could have ever hoped for. You know, it's given me the best life. I had the best time going in every single day. And listen, if you have to put up with a bit of scrutiny and a bit of spotlight on you, I think it's the least you can do to deal with it, really, because the game gives you absolutely so much. And, you know, I've got the best memories, and I've led the best life because of it. So for me to sit here and grumble would be sour taste, I think.
You were saying though, Pete, about going professional. Do you think the camaraderie with smartphones, with the social media, the lack of conversation maybe between players, that has been lost as much with guys being so into their phones?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's hard. I never wanted to be a bitter old pro. Do you know what I mean? Like, I tried my best towards the end, but it was hard not to at times. I'd be like, you know, I grew up with playing cards on the bus, and you know, everyone having a chat. And what I remember, certainly in the early days at Portsmouth, when I was, I think I was 20 when I signed there. Everyone had to bring a film, and we'd watch a film all together at the one TV. We were all round it, and we'd, you know, each week a new player would have to bring a film, and then you'd get marks out of 10 and rated. And it was just all a bit of fun, and things like that just stopped, really. And everyone had their own iPads, everyone had their own phones, and people would watch their own films, and it became very solitary. And obviously there was a few of us. I was with the Irish boys mainly at Stoke. Keeping the card school alive. It was me, Glenn Whelan, John Walters and Mark Wilson, keeping this card school alive. But yeah, I mean, it's dying out, and it's a bit of a shame, I have to say, without sounding hopefully like a bitter old pro.
No, you're not. I get you as well. I was the same with the way I'm looking around. But do you feel that you got to know your teammates as well in the end as you would have known them early on?
Well, no, that's the shame. And I think, obviously, I was looking around. I always remember a story. I was playing at Huddersfield, the McAlpine Stadium. I think it's called something else now. But it was right towards the end. And I was warming up with one of the young lads, and he said to me, "Have you ever played here?" And I said, "Yeah, my debut season, I played here 2000. And he just turned around to me and said, "Oh, quah, I wasn't born." And, you know, I was warming up next to him on the same pitch thinking, I think it might be time for me to say goodbye. I think, yeah. And that's sort of just because you don't realise, I think, because in football you stay young for so long, you know, all the young lads that come in keep you young, keep your mind fresh, and every day you go into training, you're having a laugh, and you've never really had to grow up. You know, people take care of everything for you, just so you can concentrate on football, and you never really have to grow up. And I think that sort of kept me young. But I miss the dressing room badly. I really do. But I do think it's a different place to when I, certainly to when I began.
Well, everyone has to grow up eventually, Peter. And you have four kids under six. How are you coping with that in these times?
Whoa, that's some achievement.
I'll tell you something. The homeschooling is not going great. My wife's Bagsy'd the 4-year-old, and I've got the 8-year-old. And
Bagsy,
it's intense. The maths is intense. What I know about the Normans now doesn't. You don't need knowing. You don't need to. Honestly, I know everything about the Normans. 1066. I know the lot.
Yeah, I think history is getting high on everyone's agenda. Peter Crouch, thanks a million for taking our call.
Game on 2FM.